Hi, this is Kim Catola. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. You can hear the show live on Sundays at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, and there are many more podcasts for this and all of our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Catola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Good evening and welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. Tonight we are live on this 18th of January, 2015, Sanctity of Life Sunday. Perhaps you heard a sermon addressing that topic today, earlier, or perhaps you're planning to be involved in one of the March for Life events that are scheduled for later in this week. Some of the states do them on different days, but of course the National March is on January 22nd, and there are two of them, actually, one on the West Coast and one in Washington, D.C., and we'll be hearing about that as we go along with the program tonight. And if you aren't aware of these events, I hope that you'll find this a very informative evening. I hope that as we open your eyes to some of the things that are happening to defend the life of the unborn, that you'll be blessed by it and you'll perhaps even be called to action yourself. I'm Kim Catola, your host, and tonight our guests include Janet Morana of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, one of its co-founders, and we're also going to begin the hour by welcoming in Kristen Hawkins of Students for Life of America. Kristen has been involved in politics and in activism, I should say, and advocacy from a very young age, even from her high school career, and she was part of the Bush-Cheney reelection committee campaign, and then became president of Students for Life of America in 2006. And she has grown that organization to be one of the largest pro-life organizations in the world. They have a presence on over 800 campuses. My numbers are probably low because I've only checked them in the last week. The organization grew, again, almost 800 different divisions of Students for Life of America, 49 states. And her national conference now has grown to be attended by 2,000 students, making the event the largest pro-life conference in the nation. Kristen Hawkins, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I understand that Law Students for Life have a big role in this year's National March for Life event. Do you want to start by talking about that tonight?
Sure. Yeah, there'll be some law students from Liberty University that are going to help lead the March for Life this year.
And so tell me about Law Students for Life, because Students for Life of America, I didn't do a very great job of fleshing out all that that organization does, but there are also some interest groups for Students for Life, Med Students for Life, Law Students for Life. Tell us about your vision for these organizations and what you're really hoping to accomplish.
Sure. Well, you know, there's many different types of students, as you know. We work with, you know, we have Students for Life groups in high schools and colleges, but over the years we've started Med Students for Life groups and Law Students for Life groups for these students obtaining these graduate and graduate schools and these professional degrees, because, you know, being pro-life doesn't stop when you get your undergraduate degree. It continues on, and especially if we're the med students and the law students that we see, you know, they're going to come face to face with this issue, especially for the medical students who on a daily basis will be making life and death decisions.
Mm. And I also, I really applaud the fact that the vision includes pregnant students. Pregnant on campus is a rather unique outreach. Tell me about that.
Yeah, Pregnant on Campus started a few years ago, and it was really a response to, you know, a lot of work that our groups were doing on campuses, trying to find ways to serve women in their community who are hurting from abortion or who are considering an abortion. And so we started the Pregnant on Campus Initiative, and it's a way to, you know, teach our Students for Life groups how to set tangible goals that they can accomplish on their campuses. And so we tell them, you know, here's a series of things that we think you can achieve on your campus to create a culture of life, to create a culture on campus that supports pregnant and parenting students. And then we help them walk through those steps to help her start providing those resources that are needed. I mean, because we're so long on a college campus, and still, sadly, today, you've got women who are sadly choosing abortion, thinking abortion is their only option, simply because they don't want to have to drop out of school and lose all the money and the time they've invested into an educational career, when in reality, she can stay in school and choose life. She doesn't have to choose between the life of her child and her education.
And what's the biggest challenge there? Is it housing, or is there an institutional bias against pregnant students? What are the challenges the students face?
Well, yeah, you know, right now the biggest thing that we see is the housing and the daycare. You know, because of the laws that have been passed in the past few decades, you know, it's illegal to discriminate against the student who may be pregnant or who may be a parent. And so the administrations tend to be more friendly, but they don't tend to provide all the resources that are needed for her. And housing and daycare are the two biggest challenges we continually see from students who are pregnant and are trying to decide how can they stay in school and keep their child and parent their child.
Kristen, this is awesome because it's really, you know, it struck me so early on when I started reaching out to women hurt by abortion that the pregnancy help movement has to be supported by those of us who are pro-life, because we can't simply say, you know, don't have an abortion, go and sin no more. We've got to offer some practical solutions. And so that's so great that this outreach, Pregnant on Campus, is part of what the work of what Students for Life of America is doing. You know, so as we think about this, you have an ambitious goal of abolishing abortion in our lifetime. Now, tell me about that, because some people might not be aware that, you know, there are a few different approaches within pro-life work. Some people are very interested in getting whatever incremental victories can be had so that, you know, a state by state hedges are placed around abortion. Others are for abolition and abolishing it as something that should never be accommodated in the law or by any other means. Tell me about your stance on this.
Sure. Well, you know, we believe that this generation, because of the past 40 years and all the incredible work that leaders and grassroots folks in the pro-life movement have been doing, we have a chance of actually ending legal abortion in this lifetime. Polls are shifting back to our side for the first time since Roe versus Wade. People now know that it's a baby because, you know, just very basic advances in ultrasound technology are out there. There is no doubt that it's a child inside of her. And we have more support services now than ever. There's more pregnancy help centers out there, pro-life centers, than there are abortion facilities across the country. So we believe we have the chance of ending abortion in our lifetime. And that means, you know, working in all fronts, working in the pregnancy center movement, working in the post-abortion recovery movement, and helping women. That means getting out and lobbying for, you know, these common sense abortion restriction bills that you see across the country. You know, do these bills end all abortion? No. But do they make a step towards ending them? Yes, because they're ending some. And, you know, as long as you're never resting on your laurels and passing a pro-life bill that reduces some abortions, as long as you keep working towards the ultimate goal of eliminating them all, you know, you're still abolishing abortion one step at a time. And there's just different ways to do that.
Yeah, so tell me the good news, because last year was a watershed year. How do things look for you on the horizon for 2015?
Well, I mean, you know, last year there was I think I just saw the latest day from Guttmacher saying that over 230 pieces of pro-life legislation have passed in the past just 4 years. That's more than the 10 years before that. So we've had the most pro-life legislation passed in states than ever before. We had over 70 abortion facilities shut down across the nation. So we are now at the lowest number of abortion facilities since the peak in 1991. Abortion numbers have come down, according to the CDC. So things are moving in our direction. We've got, you know, more grassroots activism, and whether that's Students for Life, campus chapters, or 40 Days for Life cities, more people than ever are activating and participating in the pro-life movement. So, you know, what we expect in 2015 is another year of expansion, another year of abortion facilities shutting down, another year of Planned Parenthood scrambling to secure more government money to keep their facilities that are in the red running. And we expect more people to keep rising up.
So what would the world look like? And, you know, I don't subscribe to this, but there are people or ascribe to this view, but there are people who will say, you know, abortion has always been around. It will always be present. So, you know, your effort is bound to be futile. Why are you bothering with this? And I just want to give you a chance to address that. I don't believe it, but I'd like to hear your thoughts.
No, I mean, that's something, you know, every time I speak to an adult group, I was just in Nebraska this weekend speaking before a group of pro-life leaders and grassroots folks, and that was one of my main action items to them, was to start envisioning a world without abortion. Envision it. Don't just think it or say it might be possible, but to actually see it in your mind's eye. How can our nation survive, and how can we act without abortion? And the fact is that we can. There are first world countries out there today who actually don't have legal abortions. You know, our country existed for a long time without legal abortion. It's just been the past 42 years we've had legal abortion. So it actually is possible to say no more. We're not, this is a mistake in our history. We're going to stop this right now. We can do that. Now it's going to mean that it's more work for us as pro-lifers, because there's going to be more pregnancy centers that we're going to have to build. There's going to be more post-abortion healing, retreats and counselors that we're going to have to raise up and train. There's going to be more work for us. Our work doesn't stop the day that, you know, Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton are overturned, or that the day that every state house passes a law, or the day that the U.S. Congress adopts the Human Life Amendment. There's going to be more work, because then we're going to have to be there for her. We don't want to return back to, you know, the 1950s, where women were shipped off to a distant relative if she got pregnant out of wedlock, forced to place her child to adopt a family. We want a society where we're going to be there to love and support her and say, you have options. You can parent your child, or you can place your child with an adoptive family. Let us walk you through it. Let us help you get through this.
Kristen Hawkins is our guest. Kristen, can I ask you to stay for just 5 minutes as we take a short break?
Sure.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I know your time is precious tonight, but we'll be back after this very short break. Stay with us. This is Cradle My Heart Radio live tonight. Phones are open at 800-811-3003. Back after this.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. To Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003.
Kristen Hawkins, our guest tonight. She's the president of Students for Life of America. She's the author of Courageous Students Abolishing Abortion in This Lifetime. And her writings have also appeared in National Review Online, The Washington Times, Citizen Magazine, and The Blaze. And Kristen, as we think about this upcoming March for Life, you know, and creating a culture of life, creating a culture where abortion is no longer seen as an option. What do you think the average person on the sidelines needs to know, think, and do? I mean, I remember speaking with Rebecca Kiesling, and I'm sure you know Rebecca's story. She was a product of rape before Roe versus Wade, and so her mother gave birth to her and released her for adoption. They've since gotten to know each other and have a relationship. And Rebecca says so eloquently, "I wasn't born because I was wanted. I was born because I was protected." And the follow-up question was, well, wait a minute, you know, pro-choicers, abortion rights advocates say that that's forcing women to give birth. And she said, absolutely. What's your next question? You know, because pregnancy is one period of a woman's life. And I don't say that forcing women to give birth is something that, you know, we should talk about without a heart of compassion. But, I mean, how do we motivate those who are on the sidelines to err on the side of the child when exercising compassion toward women rather than buying into this rhetorical line that it's a woman's right?
Well, I think, you know, people who are listening tonight on the show should, I think, really should think about a nation without abortion, going back to what we discussed earlier of, can this be possible and what would this look like? And I think And I would encourage everyone listening to start believing that it is possible, because once you start believing it is possible, you're going to act differently. You know, if you knew that Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Baltimore were going to reverse this Thursday, I bet you would act a little differently during the course of the week. You would find more time to pray about abortion. You would be going out and praying in front of the abortion facilities. You'd be calling the pregnancy centers, offering help and saying, you know, I can help support women, or I can help mentor someone who's going through an unplanned crisis pregnancy right now. But that's really what you need to do. You need to believe it in your heart of hearts that we can end abortion this lifetime, and then you need to act like it. You know, every Monday, wake up and say, abortion's going to be over by this Friday. And if it doesn't end on Friday morning, you wake up, say it again. It'll be over by next Friday, because challenge yourself to constantly be doing more than you've ever done before to end abortion. And that's simply talking about abortion, talking about the harmful effects on women and how this is a, you know, quote unquote, a choice that has devastated millions of lives across our country. And it's a silent thing that women are, and families are suffering from. And they're told that there's something wrong with them if they dare suffer from this. So talk about abortion, how it hurts women. You know, get active in the pregnancy center movement. Get active right there in your community. You don't have to have a lot of money. You don't have a lot of time. But do something, you know, volunteer to mow the lawn or put up flyers in your church and your parish advertising the pregnancy resource center, making sure that your churches talk about abortion and mention it. I was so disappointed. I went to Mass and there was nothing mentioned at all about abortion. I went right up and after the end and I said, what did you forget today? You forgot to mention something really important today. So keep talking about abortion, because that is what the abortion industry wants to happen. They want no one to talk about abortion. They want to be the silent thing that women and men suffer. But the most harmful thing to the abortion industry is when we talk about it.
I agree, and I thank you for your passion and for your, for your effective outreach, Kristen, to motivate the next generation and to mobilize them. I think there are many already very well motivated because they're missing siblings, they're missing cousins, and they understand that they understand the obligation to carry forward a pro-life worldview into the next generation. Kristen Hoxton, thank you so much for joining us.
And thanks for having me tonight.
Godspeed with all the events at March for Life
Thank
and beyond
you.
This year. Thank you. So it's about 24 minutes after the hour. And, you know, as we think about what Kristen had to say, I can't agree with her more that you and I have a role to play in this. And it not only has to do with action, but as she said, it begins in our hearts. I mean, if you have ever had a judgment towards someone who was pregnant with questionable circumstances, that covers a lot of ground. You know, can you find it in your heart to suspend that judgment and simply offer a hand of help? If you have an uneasiness over this whole question of rape and incest. Can you do some reading and educate yourself and learn about what the real challenges are for women facing those circumstances? Become part of the solution is what I'm trying to say. You know, there are many reasons for hope as we think about the fact that abortion is still legal. 1 million children a year are dying in the abortion facilities across America. But according to polls, pro-life has been the new normal for Americans since 2009. In 2012, 50% of Americans identified as pro-life, while those identifying as pro-choice hit a record low of 41%. And young people are increasingly pro-life. That's evident as thousands of youth travel to the March for Life each year. Trends show that support of unlimited access to abortion by young people has dropped 12 percentage points in the last couple of decades. And according to Gallup, support for making abortion broadly illegal is growing fastest among young adults. Why? It's concern for the next generation, for the unborn. And yes, we have compassion for that woman who is caught in dire circumstances. But pregnancy is not life-threatening. Pregnancy is a temporary situation, and releasing a child for adoption or exploring the other options that are available to women begins to change the entire landscape, begins to change the entire tenor of the conversation. 800-811-3003 is our number. We are live tonight. And if you want to know more about Students for Life of America, perhaps support their organization, learn more about what they're doing, or find out more about Kristen Hawkins' book, Courageous, Students Abolishing Abortion in This Lifetime, be sure to visit us at cradlemyheart.org. And you'll find links to not only Students for Life of America's website and Kristen's book and others, but some very interesting statistics as well as a very informative video that they put together, just helping to put this whole issue into context. You know, I think that Kristen is right when she says that the abortion industry wants us to not talk about it and wants us to not know about it. They thrive in an environment of ignorance. And it isn't long before the privacy provision of that law leads to secrecy, leads to the inability to be able to even have a reasoned conversation about it. And so that's part of why we're here every week, trying to keep that conversation open, trying to offer the mercy and healing that is available to us in Christ after abortion, if, like me, you have that as part of your story of your past. But I was so struck by something that I read this week. I started reading a book that's been out there for a couple of years now, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. And I'm not well enough through it to give you any kind of a review. But basically, she's a woman who had cervical cancer and was treated in the charitable side of Johns Hopkins Hospital. And her cells were harvested, some say, against her wishes without her family's consent. But what was unique about Henrietta's cells is that they didn't die, and they are still living on. She died of cervical cancer in the 1950s, I believe, the early 1950s. Again, forgive me, I'm not crystal clear on my facts concerning her case, but it's a fascinating story. And her cells have been used in medical research and have revolutionized many, many aspects of the way that disease is treated. The epigraph of the book is from Elie Wiesel, and I wanted to read this to you tonight because I think it so pertains to what we're talking about here. He said, and he wrote this in The Nazi Doctors and the Nuremberg Code. Elie Wiesel received the Nobel Prize for his work helping those who had survived the Holocaust during the Second World War. He said, "We must not see any person as an abstraction. Instead, we must see in every person a universe with its own secrets, with its own treasures, with its own sources of anguish, and with some measure of triumph. The unborn life is fully human, and I believe, yes, a person, from conception forward, with a unique plan of God's own making, And as we continue talking tonight about this, we're going to speak next with Janet Morana. She is one of the co-founders of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, and she's been speaking out publicly for a number of years. She's going to share a new layer to her story tonight, and one that I think will help you understand the problem of grandparents grieving abortion. We'll talk with Janet Morana when we continue tonight on Cradle My Heart, coming up next.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
So glad that you could join us tonight. We really appreciate that and hope that you'll be able to tune in next week, too. Our guest next week is Dr. Gerard Nadal. He's a bioethicist, and we're going to talk about the fact that 92% of parents who receive a prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome will abort in America. The numbers are very high for things like cleft palate and clubfoot elsewhere in the world, in the UK and India. Treatable conditions, cosmetic conditions in some cases. In the US, it happens to be Down syndrome. What about the protection of the rights of the disabled before birth? We have laws to protect them after they're born. Let's talk about this with Gerard Nadal next week. Next up here tonight on Cradle My Heart, we're going to welcome back Janet Morana to the program. You know, recently a group invited me to speak for a Sanctity of Life event, and the host explained that, well, of course, the group was mostly past the childbearing years, but asked if I would please come and speak anyway. And I had to laugh. I said, you know, what you don't realize is that the abortion decision is often driven by the expectant grandparents. Parents become desperate to save their daughters and sons from a pregnancy that they perceive as a threat to either the reputation, education, prosperity, and so on, of their offspring. Grandparents may find out after the fact that their child or daughter aborted a son or granddaughter. And in the aftermath, there is a great deal that must be healed. So Janet Morana is going to share with us a little bit of her story tonight. And as I say, we're welcoming Janet back. She is the executive director of Priests for Life and the co-founder of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, world's largest mobilization of women and men who have lost children to abortion. She's also the author of Recall Abortion, published by St. Benedict Press in 2013. Janet, welcome back to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you, Kim. And, of course, we're gearing up, of course, this week for the March for Life and Walk for Life, where the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, of course, will have men, women, and now others giving their testimony. And this is part of our new initiative this year for the campaign called Healing the Shockwaves of Abortion. The concept, Kim, is that, you know, every abortion has, at the very epicenter of that, is the death of the child, the mother's involved, the father, and, of course, the doctor. But then that child's death also affects so many other people, and we're going to begin addressing all these other groups that are affected, like the grandparents, the siblings, and so on. So we're excited about this new initiative because it's really reaching out to show society that everyone is affected by the death of a child from abortion, and we want to bring everyone back for healing.
I love that, and I think it's so important, and I really believe that this is going to be such a key piece of the healing of many after abortion, because it's such an isolating experience. And I know, Janet, when I began to deal with my abortion, first of all, things had to happen for me spiritually, because
right.
my biggest problem was my relationship with God.
Uh-huh.
But as he took care of that for me, and called me to speak out and began, you know, telling the truth, I thought, well, who really needs to hear this? This is how strong my isolation was. And the
right.
year was 2001.
Yeah.
And I guess denial keeps you very ignorant about the facts but I was working in media all those years after the abortion and still thinking I was the only one. It's such an isolating experience.
And well, you know, so, it is. The abortion industry basically tells you to have the abortion today, go back to school and work tomorrow, no big deal. So if you feel like, well, I'm starting to feel horrible about this decision, but everyone else says it's no big deal, move on, what's wrong with me? And so you feel like you're not going to talk about it. You just kind of stuff those feelings down. And you know, very often, Kim, and like you just alluded to, many of the women, when they have their abortion, are not attending, you know, church on a regular basis. They've kind of drifted away from the Lord. And that's another factor, too. It all plays in that abortion decision. But, you know, they don't want you talking about it, so therefore, they, you know, if it's no big deal and you think it is, what's that going to do to you? You're not going to talk about it, right?
Sure. But, you know, in the years that I've been doing post-abortion ministry, I've heard from so many people of the need for this Healing the Shockwaves, Janet, initiative, because, you know, even I drove my friend to the clinic and dropped her off. I was against it, but I did do that. Or I lent money. I mean, some people that you would not think were very central to the experience definitely lived with guilt reactions many years
because
afterwards.
They took part in that decision. Because instead of saying to that friend, no, don't have that abortion, they were complicit because they either, like you just said, drove them or gave them the money. And then, you know, they themselves need healing because they were responsible in part for the death of that unborn child. And of course, like you just mentioned, the grandparents. And with the grandparents, it's two-sided. It's either the mother or father telling that young daughter she had to have the abortion, or they get kicked out of the house, or you're going to get thrown out of school. Many mothers took daughters for abortions. In my case, my daughter Kelly was away in Michigan at school, didn't tell us. You know, she knew. Raised her pro-life, you know, she knew full well if she had an unexpected pregnancy, she knew she could come to me, but she told me, Mom, I'm sorry I hid it from you, I shouldn't have done that, but, you know, she was afraid of disappointing us, and believe it or not, Kim, it's very common among pro-life families that, you know, someone in their family has an abortion, because it's not that they know they can't come to them, but they feel they're ashamed or don't want to disappoint them. And my daughter didn't tell me right away, but pretty soon she left law school suddenly after only being there about 7-8 months. She told me she wasn't feeling good. She was homesick. She had to come home. And shortly after that, I learned of her abortion. Of course, I was very devastated, very upset about it. But we went together through a post-abortion recovery program. And, of course, she's come full circle, and she's doing fine now. But it was very, very difficult, and it still grieves me and her to know that, you know, I lost a grandchild to abortion.
So help me out here now for those people listening who maybe are in your situation, and maybe all they have is that piece of information that, you know, my daughter had an abortion and she's disclosed this to me now. And, you know, I know that I feel sad, but I don't know where to place those feelings. How did you work your way through that, Janet?
Well, there are, of course, many post-abortion recovery programs. There's Rachel's Vineyard. I actually was a team leader on Rachel's Vineyard. But in my daughter Kelly's case, she was very interested in the Hope Alive healing program, which is developed by the Canadian psychiatrist, Dr. Philip Ney. So actually, Kelly and I went all the way up to British Columbia, Canada, for a week-long intensive post-abortion recovery program together. We did that a number of years ago. You know, let's see, we're in 2015. Over. I mean, it was at least it's actually before we founded the Silent No More Awareness Campaign. It was a while back. But it was a wonderful program. We came through that together, which actually, I think, made our relationship even closer, you know, that we dealt with this together.
And that's encouraging to hear, because I think a lot of times daughters and mothers think, well, this could never be reconciled, or I could never share it even. So
right.
Are the challenges for grandparents the same as for grieving mothers? I mean, for grieving mothers, we've got to deal with guilt and grief.
Right.
Tell me about grandparents' issues.
Well, I think with grandparents, you know, I had to deal with the fact that, gee, what did I not say or do that she felt she couldn't come to me? You know, like, what mistakes did I make? You start examining, you know, how you raised your children, and what did I say? What didn't I say? What should have I done? You know, it's those shoulda, coulda, woulda. You know, how could I have prevented this? And then you get to a point where you realize, you know, there's probably nothing I could have done to have prevented it. It happened. So then you have to move beyond that, and you have to grieve the loss and move forward. You know, but there is that period of time where you examine your own part in this and say, you know, what could I have done differently? And, of course, Kelly reassured me, Mama, you know, you raised us right, but I was afraid. And see, that's the thing. And you hear about this lot. I even hear it in Protestant circles where, you know, a minister's daughter gets pregnant and doesn't want her, you know, her father, who's a minister, to know, because the shame of the church, you know, his church, to find out she's, you know, pregnant out of wedlock. So there's still this feeling of, we don't want to disappoint, you know. I just feel that that's a key driving factor. Our children, you know, very often want to succeed. They want to do well, just like you want to get A's in school, you know, that kind of thing. Well, they don't want to do anything to disappoint us. And even if you've set the table, like I did, to say, to talk about, I mean, I had taken my kids to Washington when they were young. You know, we had talked about abortion. She knew all those factors, and yet she didn't want to disappoint me. And it's, you know, you grieve it, but then you name the child, you move on, you know. And I know I have you know, grandchild in heaven, and of course I have one of my other daughters has grandchildren, you know, two grandchildren. I have two living grandchildren, but I also count my grandchild that's not with us any longer. And it is sad, but you do get to that point of healing where, you know, you can move on from it. But the first step is to face it, you know, that the mother-daughter or the father, the whole family has to be willing to talk about it and then want to go to an abortion recovery program for healing.
Mm. Janet Morana is our guest. She's the co-founder of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, and also now talking about healing the shockwaves of abortion, and in so doing, sharing some of her story about grieving as a grandparent of one lost to abortion. Stay with us. We'll continue our conversation right after this, and our phones are open if you'd like to join us. 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for listening tonight. I'm Kim Cattola. Our guest is Janet Morana, Executive Director of Priests for Life and the co-founder of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign. And she's the author of Recall Abortion. And we've talked about your book, Recall Abortion, Janet, but I want to give you the chance to just lay out the premise of that, because I think that this is a really eye-opening approach. Tell me about the premise for your book, Recall Abortion.
Well, basically, what I do is, well, first of all, because of my experiences with the women from Silent No More, I know that even if they've gone through healing, and I'm sure you would agree, that, you know, you still recall your abortion. You can remember the day the baby would have been born, the day you had your abortion. There's things about it you still recall, even though you've gone through healing. It's just that you're in a safer place about it. But what I do in the book is I present the case why abortion is a bad product, which has failed women, and why we should demand a government recall. It's a medical procedure, and it's not even medicine, really, when you think about it, because what it does is abortion stops the body from doing something it's supposed to be doing perfectly fine and naturally. It actually interrupts it. But what I do is I take it on as a bad product by showing the damage it's doing to women. But I use testimonies of not just the women, but also medical experts. And I take on all exceptions, rape and incest, life of the mother, fetal anomaly. And I heard you at the break talking about next week you're going to have Dr. Nadal on to talk about fetal anomalies, which, as you know, with the ultrasound and the different blood tests now, it's basically search and destroy mission, basically, where if they get a poor diagnosis right away, the medical community just recommends an abortion. And I show how it's damaging for the women, both physically and psychologically, in all these cases. If you look, like, just for example, rape and incest, all right, I have testimonies in the book of women who were raped and had an abortion, and also women who were raped and either raised the child or made an adoption plan. The women who had the abortion all say that they deeply regretted the decision and it bothered them and they shouldn't have done that and they grieved that child, whereas the women who either raised the child or placed the child for an abortion said the child did not remind them of the rapist, and it was a healing experience. One in particular I'd like to point out from the book is a young lady by the name of Liz Carl. And Liz was date raped in college, and she actually was thinking of having an abortion, and it was her roommate who told her, "You can't do that. You're pro-life. I'll go with you to tell your parents." Now, there, as we were discussing before, is a case where that friend didn't offer to drive her or give her the money. She's actually saved the baby by saying, "I'll help you go tell your parents," you know. And, of course, the parents told her, "Don't worry, we'll get through this together." And she made an open adoption plan, and it's a beautiful story. But I show that, you know, if you play out the statistics in all these cases, the women who end up aborting because of pressure always regret it. And the ones who stick with it and have that child never say they regret having the child. Matter of fact, at the March for Life this year, one of our Silent No More ladies is going to give her testimony during the rally up at the platform. And to go in line with the march's theme this year, which is Life is a Gift, which reminds me, of course, St. John Paul II always said life is always good, you know. But we're going to have Nancy Cruz in, who is our regional coordinator in Illinois. And she had a poor fetal diagnosis for her baby. And at 16 weeks, she had an abortion by being pressured by the doctor who said you should terminate the pregnancy. And she's going to, from the March for Life stage, talk about the regret that she had from that decision. And, you know, there's cases, too, in my book where one couple in particular was told that their child would have Down syndrome, all right? And guess what? He's a perfectly healthy fella that's in college now playing football. So the diagnosis was wrong.
There's many wrong diagnoses.
Yeah, there's wrong diagnosis. So imagine, you know, if that couple had caved in to the pressure from the doctors telling, "Oh, you should terminate," and they said, "No, this child is a gift from God, whatever it is, we're going to face it head on." Well, in their case, a perfectly normal child was born, and here the doctors told them that the child was going to have Down syndrome. So, you know, it's always, err on the side of life is always the right choice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But in the book, I show how it's a bad product, and in every case is bad for the woman physically, of course, always bad for the baby because the baby's destroyed. But I show, practically speaking, how it's also bad for the woman. And I actually do a full chapter, Kim, on the pill, and I show how damaging that is for women also.
Well, and Janet, so you gave us a little preview there of what's going to be happening at the March for Life with the speakers. And how many women are planning, women and men, are you planning to have speak this year?
Well, this year, you know, in front of the Supreme Court, which is, you know, the march, as you know, starts down, it's going to start this year on 14th and Constitution, which is pretty exciting because we're going to almost double the distance of the march. It reminds me, years ago, we used to be almost down by the White House, you know. So I'm glad to see that the March for Life was able to push it back further. So when we get to the Supreme Court, we will start our testimonies, and we have approximately 40 people. More people are going to be marching, but actually about 40 testimonies. And the historic thing this year is going to be Dr. Tony Levitino, who's a former abortionist, and he's been pro-life. Actually, he's a medical advisor for Priests for Life. He's going to be marching as part of this Shockwave Initiative, holding a sign that says, "I regret performing abortions." Mm. And he's going to give his testimony. This is historic, because this is the first time now an abortion doctor, a former abortion doctor, is going to march with the men and the women, and there's going to be grandparents. There's going to be mothers and daughters marching with the different signs, and siblings are going to have signs that say, "I mourn my sibling's abortion." So this is all part of this whole Shockwave Initiative to show the impact that abortions had. So we're pretty excited about the testimonies will be expanded this year to involve these different people groups.
Talk just a little bit about men. I know that men give testimony, and I'm not sure if they've been included in your book, but tell me just a little bit about what you've heard about the men from the men.
Well, in this particular book, I didn't include the men because I was focusing in on the abortion procedure in my book.
Sure.
But with the Silent No More Awareness campaign, you know, we had our first event in 2003, but by 2004, the first men came forward to say, I want to give my testimony. We've had men ever since, and actually we sometimes have couples giving testimony. You know, with the men, it's really it's kind of like the grandparents in a way. Some men wanted to stop the young lady from having that abortion. They told her, you know, I don't want you to have the abortion. No, we'll raise this child. You know, we'll go through this together. But in other cases, the guys say things like, well, whatever you think, or do what you want. Or in some cases, they tell them, you have to have an abortion. Here's the money. And, you know, if you don't have that abortion, I'm going to leave you. I mean, I can introduce you to women who were told you who even married. You know, they had four children and they pregnant again. And one case, the husband said, well, if you don't have an abortion, I'll leave you. So what's a mother of four children do? She went and had that abortion. So, you know, with the men, it's either they were encouraging the abortion or they couldn't stop it. But in any case, they also stuff those feelings way deep down. And usually they begin to surface years later if they marry and then that lady, you know, their wife has, you know, is pregnant. And people, you know, when she has that baby, start congrats, oh, you're a dad. And suddenly, bam, it hits them. Wait, this is not my first child, you know, and they begin to have to deal with these feelings. And with the men, just like with the women, a lot of them, you know, they abuse drugs and alcohol to numb the pain. Some of them become, they participate in addictive behaviors, become workaholics or gambling or pornography, you know, just to kind of deal with the feelings until they reach out and seek help. And I can tell you from the Rachel's Vineyard retreat program, they've been having men on those retreats for over a decade, or more longer even, where men have come forward to be on those retreats with the women. And even if they're no longer with the woman that had that abortion, it's very healing for them to be with these other ladies, and it's very often very healing for those women because they sometimes have no contact with the man that they were involved in with their abortion. So they kind of heal together, you know? So it is very healing.
Sure. Well, Janet, thank you so much for opening up your heart to share your story, what happened in your family. I also applaud your daughter's courage in allowing you to share the story. I know you have her permission for that, and I'm sure that it helped someone listening tonight. And so I just appreciate that. And blessings to you on the March for Life and all of the hard work that's gone into this event that's happening this week. I hope that it's hugely
effective.
And if
people want information, Kim, they can just go to silentnomore.com. There's information up there on the Shockwaves Initiative and all the things we spoke about.
All right. Thank you, Janet. And, of course, we have it linked at cradlemyheart.org. God bless you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Go.
So that wraps up our program for tonight. And I hope that it has been helpful to you. I hope that some of the silence of your own heart has been broken through to know and hear and understand that God loves you. That is our purpose, that you would understand God's great love for you, that he's not angry with you, he's not turned his back on you. He is ready to receive you as you receive all that he has already done for you in our Lord Jesus Christ in his sacrifice and his glorious resurrection. I do hope that you'll be able to join us next week with Dr. Gerard Nadal. And please go to cradlemyheart.org for all of our program notes. You can look through the archives of podcasts of former guests and drop us a note. We'd love to hear your thoughts. I answer all emails personally, so you know that your confidence is absolutely respected and your privacy upheld. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Thanks for listening and being part of the program. Remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart. For more information about this show, you can visit our Cradle My Heart program page on myfaithradio.com.